Our first annual seed and start fair called Free the Seeds is Saturday, March 19th at Flathead Valley Community College from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. We'll have 18 workshops, 30 booths, 2 films, lots of kids' activities, 2 roundtable discussions on food resiliency for our community, and lots of seeds and starts for sharing and swapping. Come one, come all. For more information, check out freetheseedsmt.com or check us out on Facebook. You can also call 406-471-0022. It's going to be a great time.
Oh, books.
Right. Yep.
I don't know if anybody reads books anymore, but I still like books.
Do.
And I've even got a Kindle, and I sometimes when I travel, I use the Kindle, but I love books. I love the feel of books in my hands. And some books, good gardening books, you can't even get in print anymore. You have to try to find them through the vintage sections. But one of the things that I wanted to kind of point out is that even though I have gardened for so long, there are some great efficient new ways to do things that reduce the amount of labor. I mean, your front end labor is hard, but in the end, it's different. And one of my things is when I had these big greenhouses. And I'm sure everybody sees this stuff when they're at nurseries. So when I had my greenhouse, I used this stuff called ground cover. It's woven ground cover. It's black. It's polyethylene. It comes in varying lengths, anywhere from, 50-foot widths to 4-foot widths. And I would get, because my greenhouses were big, I'd get 10-foot widths, and then I would, kind of pin them together down the middle line. I've got these lovely green stripes that go the whole length of the roll, spaced exactly 1 foot apart. What's great about this stuff, this ground cloth, is you put it down on the ground, and light cannot get through it, but moisture can. So if you water your plants in your greenhouse, the water flows down through the floor. If you have perennials sitting outside in a big, place where you have containers and containers, like I did. I had hundreds of containers of potted perennials that I would sell every year. So I'd grow them outside. So I'd have this ground cloth down, and, the containers would sit on top of that, and I wouldn't have to worry about weeding. Well, now, in my floral gardens, I literally do all of my rows. I do all of my, I usually grow in 4-foot wide rows. That's sort of a standard for a lot of growers these days. And so is this method, by the way. And I do all of this stuff you've got to do. Put in the compost, put in the rock phosphates and the good minerals, the good organic minerals that plants need and soils need to be healthy. And then I lay down, 4 to 5 lines of irrigation tape, because you want them to get water. You got to water your flowers. If you want good flowers, you can't just throw the plants in the ground and walk away. And they love being fed water at the roots, not from the top. So you don't want to sprinkle them. You want to water them at the roots. And then I lay down this ground cloth. And this ground cloth covers, each row. And usually if I use a 6-foot wide roll, then 4 feet right in the middle of the bed itself, and then 1 foot off one side in the aisle and 1 foot off the other side in the aisle. And each of these rows meet in the middle, with these rows of landscape cloth. Now, the landscape cloth itself, I burn holes in it. So the holes are in grid fashion, and I've got 6-inch spacings, and I've got 9-inch spacings, which are the 2 typical spacings for my flowers. The holes are only little 2-inch diameter holes, and they're burned in. We have a metal template, and we just use a propane Bunsen thing to just burn really nice holes. And the plastic melts around the edge, so it never frays on you, so these holes stay perfect. So you end up with this beautiful black grid with your irrigation underneath and lovely organic soil underneath with perfect rows, and then you just sit there and you plant your little seedlings right in all those little holes, and you've got an automatic irrigation system that you set up. So, you know, mine's on a timer, so mine get watered at specific times for a specific amount of time, and those flowers grow spotlessly clean with almost zero weeding, because, you know, the ground cloth meets right in the middle of that 2 foot path, you know, down the rows. You know, you've got a 2 foot path, and even the path is covered with this cloth. So everything's pretty much wrapped. The soil is wrapped in this wonderful dark cloth. And you get all kinds of great stuff happening under there. You get earthworms, and you get happy microorganisms, and happy flower roots, and, you know, you just end up with a really shiny, clean, beautiful product. And because, you know, because you've done all that work in the beginning, that's where, you know, that's where all your energy goes, is right in the beginning when you're setting that up. But once you plant those plants in there, you are not up and down those rows 2-3 times a week hoeing every single square inch of soil. You know, you've got a really clean, modern way to grow your plants. And I had mentioned to you one of the books that I really, really loved. It's the New Market Grower. Gosh, I can't remember where is it. I'm having an Alzheimer's moment. It's the Market Gardener. It's by a guy named Jean Martin Fortier. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you'll have that up on your site. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But this book is it's about small-scale organic farming, and it's about getting amazing amounts of produce out of a much smaller space and how to do it. And this is probably one of the best, it's like the Bible as far as I'm concerned, about how to take a very small piece of land and get anywhere from 3 to 4 times more produce off of it than a farm, you know, 10 times the size. So it's a great book. And it's all about soil health. You know, it's all about how to do things smarter and, you know, how to plant more intensively, how to feed things so that they're compensating for the fact that they're planted closer. And that's how people can do something like this on a small scale. Now, you had mentioned the Facebook page for the flower farmers, and a lot of the flower farmers on that page, they're tiny. They're tiny little mom and pops, or it's a mom at home with little kids, and they're making beautiful product right in their yards, and they're making money doing it. Is it $50,000 a year, or is it $5,000 a year, or is it only $500 a year? It all depends on how intensively you plant and how much land you have to work with. And, you know, the ability to learn, you know, how to get the very most and the very best product out of your property is right at your fingertips. And all it takes is reading about it and then applying what you read. And, you know, I wholly recommend anybody who has a little thing in their heart that tells them that they want to do something like grow fresh cut flowers, or grow produce of any kind, or grow even shrubs or trees for trade, just find a way to do it and get started. Just get started. And before you know it, you know, you're somewhere.
Awesome. So many things I could say. That's one of the very first books I bought when I started the podcast. Joyce Pinson, who also is in the Flower Farmers, and I noticed we have a friend in common on Facebook, recommended that book, and I bought it right away, and Mike has read it, and we've been implementing a lot of those things and are working on implementing more. as we try to, you know, get started. I love the way you talk about, you know, people are doing it, small farms, locals, moms with kids. And the other part is, even if you're not making money, you could look at the money you're going to save by not buying those things that you might normally buy. Plus, you're going to have healthier food or flowers on your, you know, if you're somebody who buys a lot of flowers. The whole time I've been talking to you, I've been thinking about one of my biggest inspirations growing up was I read a biography of Georgia O'Keeffe. And she just, the way she was one of the first people that made me really value purchasing flowers. She would purchase flowers all year long.
I'm right there with you, even when she couldn't grow them.
Another thing I thought about when we very first started talking was, you know, I always think about all those in New York City, because I grew up on Long Island. And so always my life, I've always thought about when you're in New York City, there's markets on all sorts of corners. Like here in Montana, you know, we have our Conoco gas station, or like, you know, every gas station has a supermarket. Well, in New York City, you know, you don't have the car thing. So you just have the market where you go in to buy your, you know, your water or your milk or whatever you're going to buy, you know, a piece of fruit or something. But they all have flowers. And Mike and I were going to, and I always thought that would be an amazing business if we could get all those flowers and all those New York City blocks to be organic flowers. That would make a huge difference on our planet.
It would be fantastic. And, you know, a lot of the people on the floral grower, the flower growers Facebook page, they're by and large mostly all growing organically. There's a difference, however, about the fact that the National Organic Program has made it illegal to say that you're doing anything organically. They've protected the word organic. So you can't even say, you know, if you can't write something or have a sign that says organically grown, even though you are, unless you are actually certified. And because of that, it's not cheap. My fee, my annual fee to be certified organic is $450 a year. And that's hard. That's so hard for so many people who are small, you know. But for me, it was absolutely important to bring organics forward and proclaim, you know. And for me, it was worth the value to pay that fee. It's also so regulated, Jackie. I mean, the record keeping, some people, it drives them crazy. I tend to be OCD anyway about records. Mm-hmm. So for me, because I'm always keeping records because I'm always making comparisons. I want to know if the yellow, you know, zinnias did better than the red zinnia, you know. So I keep track of everything.
Oh,
so for
you're
me,
a data junkie.
Yes, well, I have to be because, you know, I don't want to be, you know, pissing into the wind, so to speak. I mean, this is hard work. I mean, there is, you know, farming
yes,
is not
being strategic is important and efficient and effective. Yeah.
Absolutely. You've got to know what you're doing, you know, because again, I read a lot of the Facebook things and, you know, some people really don't know how they did from year to year, you know, cultivar to cultivar. They think maybe they sold more of this, but they're not really sure. And I'm thinking, I want to know exactly what's selling and how much of it is selling compared to something else. And if something else isn't selling, out the door. I'm not going to waste my time or land because there are so many other things that can be grown or larger amounts of the successful ones. So
that's what I was going to say. People might not realize that they're getting more money per stem for something that they're only selling a few of, and people like them, and it's just putting your efforts. Another couple that I talked to, Denise and Tony Gates, who are also in the Flower Farmer Group, talked a lot about that.
They're the best. Yeah. Those guys are you're talking Bear Mountain Farm? Is it Bear Mountain?
Yes. In Oregon,
those
I think,
two,
right?
They're my heroes. They're like, anything that those two post, I'm like all over it. And I love their website because they've got some great little podcasts there that they do about, you know, how to set up little, you know, low tunnels and that kind of stuff. They're great and giving, wonderful human beings. I adore them. That aside, I just have to say, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they don't want to go the whole thing of becoming certified. And they've also got a lot of preconceived ideas about things they have to do, but they haven't really researched it. And some of them, again, it's just about not wanting to pay a lot of money to be regulated. But, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You're either certified organic or you're not. But if you're out there and you're growing your stuff organically and you're going through all that trouble, you can't tell anybody in writing that you're organic. You know, you can say, well, I grow them organically. You can say that, but as soon as you write it, you basically have a lawsuit that you could be hit with. So, you know, I just want to be able to say, hey, my plants are organic, you know? And
one thing,
my lippy aunt is.
I did do an interview. That's interesting because, like, so Denise and Tony were my New Year's Day guests. I saved them separate special. And then right after them, this woman, Elizabeth Weller, came on from this place called the Amazing Heart Farm in Pennsylvania and talked about one option, which is the Certified Naturally Grown program that's kind of growing in a response to that. And in some ways, they say their standards are a little bit higher than certified organic. And it also, because it's just a little bit of a less of a cost, it enables some people to get in the door where they couldn't possibly afford to pay for those organic, the certification fee. Because I think we have very few farms in Montana.
Certified organic really basically is health of the soil and what you use to fight insects. And that is regulated. And, you know, as far as the Certified Naturally Grown, I know about that organization. It's a great organization. That's actually peer regulated. So instead of getting an inspector,
right,
you know, that comes out, you have other people who are growers who come out. And, you know, I'm all for, you know, I'm somewhat of a socialist when it comes to this sort of thing. Yes, the NLP is a U.S. Department of Agriculture sanctioned program, and the regulations have been very carefully set forth. And that is that I know from what I've read about the science of plants that they're basically energy. We're all energy, all of us. Every living thing has an energy level, and so do inanimate things. And when a plant is not being given enough good food, enough water, or it's under stress, the vibration that it vibrates to, the electrical current that it gives off, changes. Its velocity, its light that it gives off is changed. Bugs see that light. You know, they see the light. And generally speaking, bugs, pests are attracted to the weakest plants. Now, why would they be attracted to the weakest plants? Well, it's because the epidermis on the leaves, because the plant is stressed or weak, is easier to pierce with the insect's proboscis, you know, their little piercing, chewing, or whatever sucking device that they use to suck juices out of a plant. It's weaker, so it's easier for them to get their teeth into it. So, in fact, if you go back to the whole methodology of carefully feeding the soil and using winter cover crops and feeding the soil and giving back to the soil and using compost teas and using all the good stuff to help a plant reach its fullest capacity as a vibrant living thing, chances are you're not going to have an insect issue. Chances are it's going to be the sick plants that get the insects. So it's really kind of it's rare, at least in my personal history with plants, it's rare to have a bug issue on really healthfully grown plants. You know, it's just not a big issue. And usually if you have a problem, it's something that you can knock down with a physical barrier, you know, whether it be netting or whether it be a lure, some kind of pheromone lure or something like that. You know, you can work in organic methodologies to fight a pest.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like the way you tied all that together. And what's a pheromone lure?
Pheromone is the perfume that's put out usually by females. Females put out a a pheromone, a perfume. It's in some insects, it's the male that has the pheromone, but it's an attractant. So that's how mating bugs find each other. So let's say Japanese beetle, for instance. It's the female of the Japanese beetle who has the pheromone. So the way to fight, one of the ways to fight the Japanese beetle is to make these traps, those yellow things you see out there in the field with a bag hanging under it. Well, those little tablets, those little packets that sit in the middle of that quad of yellow wax cardboard is a pheromone attractant, the perfume of a female. And so what happens is the males are attracted in abundance to that yellow wax paper. It flies directly into that pellet and bounces and drops into the bag. And of course, they're not smart enough to figure out how to get out of the bag. So basically, it's the males largely that are attracted to that bag and are caught. That then reduces the potential for mating, which is basically all, as my husband says, all Jap beetles are made for is chewing and screwing, and that is all they do. They, you know, they eat all day long, and whatever, you know, they have their favorites, but, you know, they eat, and then, you know, a male comes, attaches to a female, and they continue eating while they're making love, and then the female drops, you know, into turf. They drop into turf. They don't like to drop, they love turf above anything to drop into, and they lay their eggs. And then the grubs basically mature over the winter, and they live off of the feeding roots of turf because they're easy to chew. So those little grubs, those ugly little white grubs in the soil, you know, are chewing on your grass, your turf, or field grass. Doesn't really matter. They're not picky about whether it's turf or field grass. And then the other thing is, if you want to know if you've got a bunch of Japanese beetles in your lawn, just look and see if you've got a lot of vole activity. So if you've got voles that run those little tunnels all through your lawn during the winter, they're carnivorous. They live on grubs, and usually Japanese beetle grubs. So you can tell if you've got a Japanese beetle problem by just looking at the vole populations in your lawn. But the way to fight that is, you know, they've got all kinds of really wonderful little bio organisms that you can just like the, what do they call it? What is that? Milky spore. Milky spore is a white powder, pretty innocuous, that you can spread on your lawn. It's organic because all it is a little microorganism, and it kind of proliferates in your soil, and it loves to eat, or not eat, but make Japanese beetles grubs very, very sick, and they die. They basically get the flu and die. But there are ways to, you know, ways to fight everything out there biologically.
But
I'm not talking about GMOs or anything. I'm talking about, you know, things that are just naturally occurring in the environment, and they've managed to find a way to grow lots of it and turn it into a powder and use it to fight specific things.
Mm-hmm. And if you, kind of like you talked about in the beginning, stick to your soil health, they're probably not going to be there anyway, if you can get that soil health going. Or no? Do you still get Japanese beetles no matter what?
The Japanese beetles are just plain old insidious problems. They're there, you know, and once you have them, you know, you have to always have ways and methods of dealing with them. I do not like to use pesticides, you know, the type of thing that you spray, because if you can, even if it's, you know, organic, OMRI approved for organic use, that doesn't mean it doesn't kill. That doesn't mean that it won't kill honeybees and it won't kill, you know, it kill beneficials. I mean, it's, but as a poison, you know, it's approved for organic use because its residual leave behind is minimal and has a minimal impact on human beings. But let's not kid anybody. I mean, if you're trying to live in this green earth and not be killing any insects at all, beneficial or otherwise, anything you use to kill a bug, is capable of killing honeybees or, you know, something else that you like, monarch butterflies, you know. So I try not to use anything that instantly or almost instantly knocks down bugs. I am really big on going out in the morning early, and I know where my Japanese beetles like to be. They love roses. They also love raspberry plants. So I just go out there and knock them right off the leaf early in the morning before they have their first cup of coffee. They're kind of dopey. You know, they kind of hang there. They're kind of slow. It's a little bit cool, and their wings don't want to fly. And I just have a, you know, like a canning jar with soapy water, and I just kind of thump them right in, and, you know, let them take a bath, their last bath. And that's how I deal with them. You know, I prefer that over using something that I have to spray.
And I think in the long run, it might be more effective. A lot of people I've talked to have said that's what they do. And it's not always nice to have to go out and pick off the Japanese beetles. But, you know, there's just some things you have to do. So speaking of activities in the garden, is there something that you just like, what is your least favorite activity to do? Is there something that you just have to force yourself to get out there and do? Is that it? Or
my favorite thing to do?
No, or my your least favorite. And then we'll flip it and talk about your favorite thing.
Okay. So this is all just a matter of headset. To be honest with you, as soon as I get an attitude that I don't like something, I spin it around and just say, I love it. I used to hate weeding. But I got to be honest with you, now I see weeding as a very zen sort of thing. You know, hating and loving things are very weather dependent and are body pain dependent. Usually I really dislike things if my body is sore and it's hot outside. So I hate everything then, and I don't want to do anything then, and so I don't do it, because guess what? I'm a natural organism too, right? My body's saying you don't want to do it. But I do functions now, like weeding. I change my way of thinking about it. I get myself psyched up, and I say, boy, I can't wait to get out there and do that. I'm really looking forward to getting that cleaned up, you know. And then I go out, and I hunker down. I get my iPod, and I play some good old Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and, you know, just kind of zone out and weed. And before I know it, it's done, and I'm, like, happy. My favorite, all-time favorite thing to do is just cutting buckets and buckets and buckets of flowers. I love it. You stand there and you cut stem after stem after stem, and you strip the leaves off, and you put each flower in the bucket, and, you know, you just keep looking back at the bucket, and it's getting fuller and fuller, and, you know, it's just, it's heaven. For me, it's heaven. Some people may not like it that much, but I love it.
Are you ready for my final question?
Yes.
Is there anything that you really wanted to say that we've missed? Did you you sent me a few links to some books. Did you want to talk about those other books?
Well, the books that I sent you, the links, the names of, or?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first off, first and foremost, I'm very, very interested in people reading the 50 Mile Bouquet. A fabulous book written by a woman named Deborah Prinzing. And she did a lot of research about this whole Andean, you know, pact that I told you about, where flower growers in America were, you know, had the floriculture industry stolen out from under them. But it really does talk a lot about the values of having locally grown flowers.
I was just going to say, Deborah Prinzing is one of my biggest inspirations.
She is amazing. She has that. She's a point girl. You know, she's the point girl for locally grown. I have high regard for her.
She has a great podcast called, I think it's Slow Flowers. It's just called Slow Flowers.
Yes, her Slow podcast. Flowers. And in fact, I'm part of her. I'm part of her group of people that support her whole program, because you know, it's time for us American florists to take our flower power back. And, you know, she's the one who, you know, raised the flag, and we're all charging toward it. And I'm hoping we get it back, and that,
nice.
That locally grown flowers. And the other thing is I'd really like to see more Americans just buy flowers. You know, you said that you saw all these flowers all over New York City, and I think in cities there does seem to be more floral sales because, of course, they're in an urban situation. There's very little of nature, so, yeah, you want flowers. But I want to see people out in the country just buying flowers. I mean, you go to Europe, flowers is right there in the other hand.
Yeah,
you know,
they say our market is nothing compared to other countries.
Yep. Well, when you see what our government did in 1988, we sold our floral trade under the wagon here. We threw it away, you know. We gave it to other countries. So obviously we gave a message that flowers aren't important to us. And it's wrong. Over in Europe, flowers they're a daily commodity. You see a guy walk down the street in Paris, he's got a baguette in one hand and a bouquet of flowers in the other. And you know, it's common to see flowers in everybody's houses, and I don't care what income level, you know.
All right, well, I'm going to report back on that because I am going to Paris, and I'm going to see that with my own two eyes.
Good girl. My phone is beeping at me because I'm ready to lose battery.
Oh, I know. That's what I was just going to say. We've been on the phone for 2 hours.
We've been having too much fun, and I'm going to have to come to Montana and hang out with you so we can just yak our heads off.
And you'll love Theodora, too, my
party.
Neighbor.
A pajama party is in order. So.
All right. Okay, so before I interrupted you, so what were the other books?
Okay, so I think pretty much the list that I gave you, it would be, oh God, let me see here. You know what? My brain is...
Okay, here it is. Okay, so Living the Good Life, How to Live Sanely and Simply in a Troubled World by Helen Scott Nearing.
That's such an old book. That's just the book that, you know, back in the 60s, I became, you know, a militant gardener. That and you know, and then the Silent Spring book. And those were my formative books that I really, you know, wanted to read a lot of. There's a really good book out called Cool Flowers. It's a nice, easy read, sweet, sweet little book.
Lisa Ziegler.
She's awesome. Really nice lady, too. I love her. Love everything she wrote. So that's a great book. I have always followed Elliot Coleman. He started out here in Vermont in the very early years with the Certified Organic Group, just like I did. So I knew Elliot way back in the beginning when he was in Goose Green here in Vermont, and I love what he put out with the Four Season Harvest, which talks about growth in tunnels, you know, and how you can pretty much get food year-round. I don't care what kind of environment you live in. So that's a great book. And let me see.
There was the specialty cut flowers, the production of annuals, perennials, bulbs, and woody plants for fresh and dried.
Yeah, by Alice Armitage. In fact, that's the first book I got, trade book, about how to grow cut flowers. So if you want to know how to grow cut flowers, get that book. It's a great book.
And then the only other one is Flowers for the Table, Arrangements and Bouquets for All Seasons?
Yes. Also, that's a fun, that's like a coffee table book and great one to pick up and reference, you know, anytime you want. And just take a look and read. That's a beaut.
Okay.
An absolute. And I've got websites that I really love to go to. If you want to learn about being a cut flower grower, go to floretteflowers.com. Erin Benziken is just this incredible woman who gives so much back to the floral growers trade. She's constantly posting blogs about how she does things and what kind of flowers she likes and why she likes them. Got a great blog. There's a lot to learn there. She just started selling wonderful seeds and tubers and bulbs this year.
Oh, really? Okay.
I am an ardent supporter of this woman. She's marvelous on so many levels. Another place I like to go to for information is Sarah Raven, and it's like Raven the Blackbird, com. She's over in the UK, and she is another person who has this really great site, very informative. She also has product to sell, but more importantly, let's say you picked a specific packet of seeds, she has growing information that sort of transcends anything that you'll find in most seed operations. So it's a great place to learn things and get ideas from.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, there is a Facebook page for the Association for Specialty Cut Flower Growers.
Oh.
And anybody who wants to grow cut flowers, check out the ASCFG.org website, because being a member of the American, the Association for Specialty Cut Flower Growers, opens up amazing opportunities, all kinds of workshops, lots of information right there on the site, the bulletin boards. In fact, many of the people that are on that Facebook page that you and I have been on are part of that association. The organization is incredible, so I highly recommend that organization above all to join if you're going to do flowers. Probably my best gardening advice is reduce your hard labor to only 3 hours a day. Don't spend 6 to 8 hours doing really hard labor. Only do three. If you're going to do any at all, you know, save your body, because it's a finite source of, you know, you break something or wear something out, it's going to impact everything you do from now on. So 3 hours, hard labor, that's it. You know?
Nice.
Yeah. And then give yourself at least a couple of days to recuperate from that before you go out and do it again, you know, because it's rough.
That's one of the nice things about gardening, that you get to move. You're, at least the jobs are very diverse. It doesn't seem like you're doing any one thing for any super extended period of time.
Well, you know, remember that early prep I was talking about?
That's
repetitive. You know, many, many, many rows of hauling wheelbarrows of compost. It's not that I don't have a tractor. I do, and that does help. It doesn't do everything. It's just hard labor, and you just have to be smart about how you parse out what it is that you're trying to accomplish. You know, don't try to do it all in one day or one week. Just pace yourself. Have a plan.
Excellent.
And pace yourself. Be good to yourself. And if I had one favorite tool, if I had to move and I could only take one tool, it would be a broad fork. Broad fork would be the one tool. Because if you have a broad fork, you don't need a rototiller. It's the kindest thing you can do for the soil. It's a good instrument with many uses.
I'm going to have to get one of those. For sure.
They're great. Oh,
okay.
They're great.
Here's the final question. Ready?
Yes.
Liz, if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you would like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
All right. Number one, I want to see the Clean Air Act. I want it. I want it to happen. I want it to be implemented. I want to work on an international level. I think the whole world needs to wake up and let's move on this Clean Air Act. That's my number one. The second is, I am so supportive and absolutely feel we need to have GMO labeling. We need to know that the food that we're eating is or is not tampered with on a molecular level, and be given the choice to eat that way or not. I'm not completely against what's happening GMO-wise. Some of it medically is very good. You know, I'm not a science phobe, but when it comes to what I put in my mouth, when I buy salmon at the store, I want to know whether that salmon is the new funky salmon that grows to full size in a quarter of the time, or if it's actually farmed and it's a, you know, standard type of Atlantic salmon, you know, or if it's wild caught. I think
or
wild
if it comes
caught
from
hard.
The... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, wild caught is wild caught, and it's frozen, flash frozen, and it says wild caught. And it looks like wild caught, and it tastes and looks like, you know, it is wild caught. But some of this farm salmon now, it's very fatty looking, and, you know, hey, it's delicious. There's no gripe there. But it turns out that these new salmon species that they're creating by crossing the genetic code of salmon with another faster-growing, I don't know if it's a pollock-type fish, but it makes a much bigger, faster-grown salmon. And now they're farming those. And now, and there's no GMO labeling on them. You'll never know whether you're getting the Faroe Island salmon or whether you're getting the GMO salmon grown from the Faroe Islands, you know, because there is no GMO labeling. And
that's crazy.
So I would like to make sure that GMO labeling is, you know, is happening, because I think that we as people need to know that. And I also know, because I have always hated Monsanto and thus most big businesses, who can lobby to make sure that things like GMO labeling doesn't happen. You know, it's the big businesses trying to keep us in the dark and trying to control the quality of our food and the increased profits in their pocketbooks. And I hate it and loathe it. So GMO labeling on everything. I'd love it.
Perfect. Okay, how about just a final inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into their own dirt or own and start their own garden?
Well, you know, I have something that I've always loved, and it did come from Rachel Carson in Silent Spring, and it's so true. She said, "Those who dwell among the beauties and mysteries of the earth are never alone or weary of life." And I believe that to be true.
Awesome. You have been a wonderful guest, just full of tons of information. Your extensive knowledge that you've been doing this for a long time really shines through in this interview. And just people are going to get tons of value about not just growing flowers, but I think it's kind of like a philosophy of life and a belief system that we kind of all share. And so even if they're, you know, more into vegetables than flowers, although I think you've made a strong case for how great of a nice of a living you can make from growing flowers. Like, that was one of the big things I was surprised about when I read The Flower Farmer by Lynn Bazinski, was how you can make a living just choosing a flower. And that's like, my husband's the vegetable gardener, I'm the flower gardener. And just, you know, meeting those, you know, just looking into those different business types. And you've been an amazing, you have such a strong business background.
I grew wholesale organic vegetables for sale. And I've come from that background of both vegetables and flowers. And then, of course, landscape design and installation, which it has a, I look back at it and I can't believe, you know, I've done all that stuff. It's kind of like, oh my God, really? I don't ever think about it. But in retrospect, I think, yeah, you know, I've done all that. And I love the fact that it's always been right in the heart of the green industry, which is the place I want to be. Hey, I'm a Taurus, you know, I'm an earth sign. So of course I would be right in the heart of the green industry.
Really? I didn't know that. My mom's a Taurus, too. You remind me a lot of my mom, although she's definitely not a hippie. But she was like the kind of, she always reminds me of like the original Martha Stewart with a natural kind of edge to it. Like, we always had flowers on our table, but at the same time, everything came from her garden and there was definitely no pesticides anywhere near it. So.
And it was all good, wasn't
and,
it? It was
yeah,
all
and it was like
good.
Locally seasonal, just because she would go out there and find, you know, whatever was blooming, or if it wasn't, there wasn't anything blooming, she'd go out and make some kind of wood thing to come in, or like, you know, at Easter she'd find pussy willows, or just she was always finding something locally in season to make our house beautiful. Yeah. And then another thing I've thought about since I started this business is that, I mean, since I started my podcast is, you know, maybe those landscapers out there, if we develop some kind of like organic certification course for them and like started reaching out to them, like it's probably a lot of it is just ignorance. Like that's the way it's been done. That's the way they've always done it. But if we presented the options to them and gave them some skills and then maybe even, like I said, came up with like a certification that they could get that would in turn make their business more, you know, as people like, you know, that might be something because you have so much experience.
Well, thank you for that encouragement.
Okay. Now, before we do this, you need to tell the listeners how to connect with you. Give them the name of your fancy new blog that's starting out. I can't believe it's only, what'd you say, a week or two old?
Actually, the blog itself is only, the whole website is only a month old, and I've already had hundreds of hits, and I don't even know where they're coming from, but it seems like people are interested. But the name of my website is mapleflowerfarm.com.
Okay.
So,
and they can find you in the Flower Farmer group?
They can, but if they connect to my mapleflowerfarm.com site, they can go to my Pinterest page, they can go to my Instagram page, they can go to my Facebook. I mean, all of it's right there, easy to get to. My blog is right there on the website, so you can read. I'm featuring mostly natives that can be used as cut flowers, and you know, all about, I'm just taking one native at a time and giving as much information as I can, what I know about them and how they can be used and grown and all that kind of stuff.
And you're writing the outline to your book while you're doing it.
You know,
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.